Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, welcome to Bet the Edge. I'm Jake Croucher here with Drew Dinsick, as always, recording. What day is it, Drew? It's Tuesday late afternoon. Left is the right, up is down after Monday night's epic NBA slate, which we'll get into. We'll also talk some puck, talk about the Stanley Cup outright and the conference markets, then we'll close a little NFL draft. But what did you make of Monday night, Drew, and the association?
Best night of playoff basketball in how many years? That was,
I don't remember.
Oof, man, what a doubleheader. The fact that both the Knicks game and the Lakers game were just such dramatic and poetic endings, I thought was pretty special. And going to remember that one for a while. And I think ultimately, the more unbelievable was certainly the Knicks. As a big Knicks guy, the Knicks were, when they're down four and Kyle, you know, they don't get up a good shot. Kyle Lowry gets fouled. He's going to the line. I basically threw my phone. I'm like, I can't believe they dunked this one. I thought this one was going to be the gimme. But no, they had different plans. This is Knicks team that does not ever give up. And ultimately I think the belly aching about the foul calls and the, you know, not calling a timeout, all that I felt like was marginal, you know, I didn't take huge exception to it. I thought the overall, like over the balance of the game, I thought the Sixers were getting a very favorable whistle. So I kind of didn't really have much sympathy for them, belly aching at the end. But whatever the case is, it was very, very cool to see the hustle and sort of the identity of the Knicks specifically get them across the finish line in that game where, at times in the fourth quarter, they looked like clearly the better team. And so it was somewhat of a deep sigh and a healthy sigh of relief, I guess. And then the Nuggets Lakers felt like you could feel like that one was coming for most of the fourth quarter, the way that the Lakers were unable to really kind of put their foot on their throats and score enough to create enough separation that the Nuggets just packed it in. You leave the Nuggets hanging around and you make it a game where you have to execute in the clutch. That is a problem if you have the defensive mechanical organization that the Lakers do defensively against the Nuggets specifically in crunch time. That was a huge, huge red flag coming into the series about the Lakers ultimately winning games and being competitive. And it, you know, it reared its head in aggressive fashion in that final 2 minutes. It seemed like at moments, LeBron was going to be able to just will them across the finish line. But, he had wide open look that would ice the game. Doesn't, clearly hits back rim. And then the Jamal Murray shot over Anthony Davis was amazing. And it kind of, revealed the two key weaknesses for the Lakers in the series. Number one, the supporting cast is just not nearly good enough to keep up with a team that's as complete, particularly a starting five and closing five, that's as complete as what the Nuggets are playing with. Just in general, the crunch time defense is a huge issue. The Nuggets are going to be able to get whatever they want to win a close game against this Lakers team. And so the Lakers' kind of only chance, I think, of getting and salvaging a win and making this a series is going to be they can't just win game three, Jay. They have to, like, blow them out and, like, get them to quit, get them to throw up the white flag and pack it in. And, maybe that'll happen, but at this point, I don't know that there's a huge margin of difference between these two teams. If it comes down to the final throws of the game, then the Lakers are in deep trouble.
Yeah, Nuggets are 1.5-point favorites in game three in Los Angeles, close to open anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's odds on that the Lakers will get at least one of these two, but, firmly odds against that they're going to go 2-2. So, I mean, the series feels this feels like the most set in stone 5-game series win that you'll have in a while, which would make sense given that games 3 and 4 are both going to be close to pick, and then the Nuggets are going to be 7.5-point favorites or whatever again in game 5. I do think the one thing I would take out of this series, which I think is now pretty over for the Lakers in terms of their chances of winning it, given they're now +850 in the market and the Nuggets are -1600. I do think this Nuggets team just isn't as good as last year. And I think that's, there was some shooting variance in game 2 that went the Lakers' favor from 3. But, I mean, the Nuggets are giving minutes to, like, Justin Holiday and Peyton Watson and Reggie Jackson. And those minutes were going to Bruce Brown last year. And Bruce Brown is a much better player than all of those guys. And last year the Nuggets were able to play, effectively a 7-man rotation with a little Jeff Green sprinkled in as the 8th guy. And this year it just doesn't. I think the benches are just a bit more unreliable, and it's a little bit of a red flag that they've gone down 20 and gone down 12 in back-to-back games against the Lakers team, which is good, but the Nuggets should have tougher matchups going forward. So that would be my takeaway out of that. I don't think there's really anything actionable. I just wouldn't really have much interest in the Nuggets at current price because whoever their matchup out of Minnesota and Phoenix is, I think, is going to be tougher than the Lakers. And then they've got, potentially, likely one of Oklahoma City, the Clippers, or Dallas waiting in the conference finals. And I think whoever gets there out of those teams will be better than the Lakers too. Let's go to Sixers-Knicks, which was about as memorable a first-round playoff game as I can remember in Game 2. What do you make of this one with the Sixers down 2-0 and 4.5-point favorites in Game 3 on Thursday?
Well, I didn't fancy their chances of really getting this Game 2. I didn't fancy it being as competitive as it was. And I thought the Sixers in general, with Maxey's questionable tag because of illness and just a one-day turnaround for Embiid, I thought they were drawing dead effectively yesterday. But boy, they played great. And honestly, there were moments during that game where you're like, wait, is Josh Hart the best Nick? What? How did this happen? And Jalen Brunson is certainly not giving us what we saw from him as far as like a top 5 NBA player this regular season. I'm not seeing it in the playoffs yet. And that's kind of weird because it's almost like schematically Nick Nurse had this ace up his sleeve of how he was going to basically try to disrupt Jalen Brunson with players kind of coming up behind him as opposed to fronting him defensively. And it seems to be working really, really well to keep him from anything efficient offensively. And I think the Knicks have some adjustments they can make to try to just in general salvage his offensive performances in this series. And nothing that I'm seeing from Embiid right now looks like this is a guy that can go 40 minutes and be an MVP difference maker night in, night out, particularly as we go deeper into the series. The fact that he's played as much as he has on back-to-back nights and you have 0 wins for it is a problem. And I think this series probably ends in 5 games. However, if it goes 6 or 7, just on the gravity of Embiid being as kind of dynamic as he is and just in general, taking longer for the Knicks to find their kind of more fluid offense, then maybe this is a 6 or 7 game series, but feeling pretty comfortable and pretty happy with the Knicks' position at this moment and somewhat lucky, I suppose, to be here.
Yeah, I think through the first 2 games, the Sixers, their process has been better than the Knicks. And that's not to say that the Knicks don't deserve to have won these games. I don't think they really deserve to win game 2. I think game 1, you can make the case that they did just with how dominant they were with their offensive rebounding and in transition. But I think the the key to me and what this series kind of turns on, outside of the obvious point of Embiid's health, is like what Jalen Brunson is going to show up the rest of the way, because he's shot 29% from the field on really high volume to date, and the Knicks are somehow up 2-0. And if he just regresses back to what you would expect, which is like in the regular season this year, he was a top 3 or 4 offensive player in the league, then with the condition that Embiid is in, the Knicks should just win this series, not necessarily comfortably, but the average outcome should be the Knicks winning in, I would think, 5 games, given that they should, you know, in theory, split the next two and then be material favorites in game 5 at home. But with Brunson, I thought there was a difference, a stark difference between his game 1 and game 2, where game 1, I thought he was actively very bad. I thought he's taking bad shots. Shots didn't look like they were ever going to go in. He was extremely tired in game 4, and that's actually pull him out mid-fourth quarter to give him a break. In game 2, I thought he was better, and I thought that he was taking better shots. He was just missing them. But I thought the process with Brunson was much better, just getting a bit more comfortable with the zone, getting a bit more comfortable with, you know, having a guy constantly on his back and figuring out how to get to a spot there. I do think it is a problem that every single possession has to go through him, and they've got Batum on him, and Batum is, you know, making it so that Brunson isn't getting the ball until there's like 10 seconds left on the shot clock, just constantly denying him, and it's tiring Brunson out. So I think Brunson will be better going forward, which is a pretty low bar given he's been shooting 29% so far. But I think the key is just that I think that in terms of strategically, I just think there are more levers that the Knicks have to pull. And yeah, I think that Nurse has gotten a lot more out of the Sixers than Tibbs has gotten out of the Knicks. The Knicks are just doing stupid things. Like the big guy who's got a really bad knee and can't run, can we go at him when he's on defense a little bit more? Can you make him jump to block a shot to see how he lands? Yeah. Like Dante DiVincenzo is the only guy who wants to try Embiid, which is insane. Like Josh Hart, can you just bundle into Embiid and go to the hoop? Like they're just giving him, they aren't forcing him to make enough moves on defense. And then Tibbs, just like, it's infuriating with, they brought Dante back way too late in game 2. And I get that Tibbs wants to ride the hot hand, ride Deuce McBride. Deuce McBride, if Tyrese Maxey is just going to pick at Jalen Brunson on a switch every time down the floor, Deuce McBride isn't that useful because he takes away a lot on offense relative to Dante. So I think with 2 days, the Knicks should figure out more things to do against the zone, more ways to target Embiid, more ways to like stop Tyrese Maxey having 10 out of 10 games. And I think it's weird because I think the Knicks are at a bit of a talent deficit, but I think that they have more levers to pull in the series and expecting that they'll get 1 out of 2 in Philly.
Yeah. And I if you told me before the series, because I, you know, a price, if you're coming up with fares in today's NBA, you should be doing it at player level, in my opinion, which means you have to do a decent job of projecting minutes. If you told me Kyle Lowry was going to be a 35-minute-a-game guy, he was going to be out there in some clutch minutes, I think I would have said, what, huh? And so, yeah, your point is fair. Like, the Sixers are getting more out of what they have currently, and there are flashing red signs about the performances of Harris, the health of Embiid, and expecting a second game like that from Maxey this entire series, I think, is asking a lot. So, can't get to 4.5 for game 3, Jay. Going back to the well in the old Knicks here, and I think it may ultimately be a better play to just wait for the second half because, you know, with there, you know, you do have a little bit of an incentive for Nick Nurse to literally just dump all of the adjustments into the pot here because you must win game 3. But that said, I think the Knicks are the better team still by margin, and everything that could have gone wrong for them this series did, and then they're still up 2-0. So this feels like a decent time to just kind of put this one away. And yeah, I'm going to be back on the Knicks on game 3, which I'm going to be on Knicks Island, by the way. So you think I should be like waiting and see how far out this gets before getting involved, or you think 4.5 is going to be the low point?
I mean, team underdog going down 2-0 back for game 3 at home is like the ultimate zigzag spot, I think, and that's going to be weighted in. I think with Embiid's knee, we just have enough of a sample now that I would be surprised if he is going to get progressively better and healthier as the series goes on. Well, now we have 2 games where he starts off, he spends like a quarter and a half looking like MVP Joel Embiid, and then he gets a ton of work done on his knee, and then he just doesn't look like himself at all in the second half. And I'm not sure what exactly the injury mechanic is with that, but like he's not putting the ball on the floor in fourth quarters. He was just taking jumpers in the fourth against the Knicks on Monday night, and it just doesn't seem like he's going to be consistently at full health, and just the nature of that injury and the fact that he keeps on retweaking it is a concern. And I just don't see how he's going to, like, I would be pretty surprised if he's at five games the rest of the way at full health. Joel Embiid, the guy that, you know, was averaging 35 points a game, scoring a point a minute, and was the MVP favorite early in the season. I just don't think that is realistic. I wonder if that's almost like a live betting thing of taking the Sixers in the first quarter and the first half and then going against them, because that's not something that the market is going to price given that it is so speculative. But just like, just having watched these games very intently with the amount of money I have on the Knicks, like, he seems to be getting actively, he's deteriorating as the game goes on, and it's been two games in a row now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So I'm going to grab a little Knicks then at 4.5 and double down at halftime when they're losing by 50.
Okay. Very good. Joel Embiid did not have a rebound in the second half. And that is, Nate Duncan talked about this on Dunked On, but that is, I mean, it's hard to say this is an indictment on Embiid given the physical state that he's in, but like, you got to box out Hartenstein on that rebound at the end. It's like, he just doesn't seem to have it. And that, it was such a kind of Knicksian sequence to win the game as they did, just really, with these like tugs and scrambles and just winning loose balls and skying in for offensive rebounds. And it just, that sequence just epitomized that this Knicks team, even though I don't think the process is as good as Philadelphia, not sure their talent level is as high as Philadelphia, but they just play with so much more force. And Kyle Lowry and Nick Batum are very old, and Tobias Harris doesn't play with force, and Tyrese Maxey is skinny, and Joel Embiid cannot move in these fourth quarters. And you've got these guys in Hartenstein and Hart and Dante, and they're just flying around and they're wreaking havoc. And I think that in a series this messy, I think havoc is ultimately going to win out, which isn't going out on a limb given the Knicks are -500 to win the series now. But yeah, the Knicks are in a very good spot. Also in a very good spot, Drew, the Cleveland Cavaliers, -700 to win the series. I would make an argument that Game 2, Magic Cavs, was perhaps the most irrelevant playoff game of all time, just given where it fell on the nightly calendar of sorts. Isn't it crazy that Jamal Murray hits a walk-off buzzer beater to more or less end the season of LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and it wasn't even close to the game of the night? And then Magic Cavs has to fall behind that in the pecking order as well. I don't have much to say about this one. Again, feels like Cavs 4-1. Wouldn't be surprised at all if the Magic win game 3, but I don't think that they have, they just, there's no path to offense in this series for them.
Yeah, I was listening to a strategy second screen stream that Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue were doing, and they got into a whole conversation of, are the Magic potentially going to be one of the lowest scoring playoff teams of all time, right? Like, you add up their total production for this playoff run, like how are they going to stack up? And that actually sent me down a whole rabbit hole of like finding out who were the lowest scoring playoff teams of all time, as opposed to just watching the game that was on NBA TV at the time. And turns out they're probably not going to come close. There were some very bad Pistons teams, and the Pistons, actually, what was really kind of wild is, I don't even remember this now in hindsight, but like, I think it was the 2009 Cavs swept the Pistons in round one in the 1-8. The Pistons scored a grand total of something like 300 points. Like, they were averaging 80 plus a game, which is insane. That is what the Magic offense has felt like. I think I would look at this particular series as probably over. It's either going to be a sweeper or Cavs in five. But I would say that there isn't a clear and obvious adjustment for Mosley to make heading into game three, and that is swapping Isaac for Wendell Carter Jr. Wendell Carter Jr. at least has gravity when it comes to shooting. And if he, you know, if he's out there with your starters, then he's doing more than Jonathan Isaac is offensively. And it kind of doesn't really matter how good your defense is at this point if you're just this incapable of generating offense. So when it looked like Suggs went down with the knee, I thought, okay, this one's over. He amazingly fought through it. I don't know if people recognize how like kind of incredible that was that he came back into that game, because that was a nasty injury, and he played through it and finished the game. And tough to say if he's going to be close to 100%, but they need him to be competitive. I think the Cavs probably get this thing done in Orlando. We're looking at a total right now, 199. This is amazing. Because it's not like the Cavs offense is covering them in glory. And this kind of sent me down another rabbit hole. When was the last time a playoff team swept their opponents in a four-game series and then got swept in a four-game series? Because I kind of feel like that's on the menu for the old Cavaliers.
Yes, indeed. I don't think there's a great deal to say about this series. I don't think either of these teams are really going anywhere. I don't think there's really any bet to be made at current prices. Just quickly, Wednesday night's NBA slate, Heat at Celtics. Celtics 14.5-point favorites, total 204.5. And then the Pelicans, 7.5-point dogs at the Thunder with a total of 212.5. Any plays on either of these two games?
I have nothing cooking in this Heat Celtics game. If you want to get involved with the Heat at plus 14.5, plus 15, Godspeed. They have, I mean, they can play. They can't play any worse than they did on Sunday, I don't think. But you know, maybe I'm wrong. That said, the Celtics are exactly as good as advertised in every which way. They're healthy right now. I thought they showed a gear when they needed to at times in the Heat game one, where it was like, okay, yes, this is, I knew it was here and you're giving it to us, like put it in a bottle, save it up for Eastern Conference Finals. But yeah, I don't think there's a bet to be made there. In the night game though, certainly the key standout for me in game one was the Oklahoma City Thunder defense, their wings and their bigs in particular being very, very disruptive with the guards for the Pelicans being able to generate easy buckets. Makes that series to me look like a dead nut under series. It's been adjusted down here to 12. I don't think that's enough. And I think ultimately Pelicans being slightly more competitive, if you get a little bit more of a pop Brandon Ingram, sure. 7.5 is, it's a big number, and I looked at it. I can't get there, but I also think that the Thunder might have gotten their playoff stink right away in game one, and so I'm going to play some under 212 and some Pelicans team total under, just on the off the defensive dominance that you saw from the wings and the bigs from the Thunder on Sunday.
Yeah, the only thing that's really interesting to me about Celtics Heat is just how Eric Spoelstra is going to choose to die in terms of what does he think gives the Heat the best chance of pulling off the miracle, because that's the only thing. Like, they're going to lose the series, but I think it might be instructive to see what Spoelstra tries to do against Boston, because it'll just kind of, by inference, relay how he thinks the way to beat this team is. And that's really the only thing that I think is compelling about the series, just in terms of strategy. But outside of that, I mean, they're just on a hiding to nothing. Like, they're minus 175 to get swept. We haven't played game two yet. And then Pelicans Thunder, I agree. I think this is going to be more of a learning curve series for the Thunder, just in terms of adjusting to what is, I think, a reasonable defense, particularly when Nance is out there in place of Valanciunas, and what Shea can do to combat Herb Jones. But yeah, I don't have a play on the series of the game at price. I think that is relatively fair.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to the Stanley Cup, the NFL draft kicks off Thursday, and we have you covered with our mock drafts, positional rankings, player interviews, and news updates around the league. Go to nbcsports.com/NFL draft today for insight leading into round one, and check back throughout the draft for analysis of every pick.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, Stanley Cup is happening. I mean, some dramatic games to date. The 7-6 in Winnipeg, which is not a score between Yannick Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz, but a hockey score. And then there was the agony and ecstasy of New York sports, as in the 10-minute time frame. The Knicks pull off their miraculous victory as the Islanders absolutely collapse against the Canes, giving up a 3-0 lead. Can't remember the last hockey playoff game where both teams pulled their goalie in the last 6 minutes. but that happened, and the Islanders are in big trouble now. How much of the NHL playoffs have you been consuming, Drew?
A good amount. Watched mostly the nightcaps because they go on a little bit later than the basketball, which is kind of strange, but okay. The Edmonton Oilers, boy, did they put on a show yesterday. Loving that team. I'm not a hockey originator, but that series price between the Oilers and the Kings made zero sense to me. Like, I couldn't math it with the freaking game one price. I was like, I must be missing something here. So I doubled down on Oilers, not just future, but this series, I have a pretty decent bet. I laid the price. So that was a huge relief. And then been consuming some news and information that we should mention. And I want your take on this because I know you were dialed in on the Canucks, but sounds like goalie Thatcher Demko injured and questionable for the rest of the series. That has to have implications. I don't know that Nashville necessarily is going to be able to claw their way back into be competitive there, but certainly for the long-term hopes and dreams of the Canucks being competitive in the West, that's got to matter, right?
Yeah, it's massive. And as far as this series goes against Nashville, to your point, I mean, it definitely moves the needle because Demko is probably going to finish second in the Vezina and is obviously one of their most important players. And the downgrade is significant, but they're still 1-0 up against the Predators. They're still favorites in the series as we're recording. But what it means, and I think what the most compelling thing is in the futures market in the NHL, is now is that like everything is just breaking for Edmonton now. Yep. In terms of health, in terms of playoff path, in terms of other results going on around them, where they had, you know, basically a miracle on the last day of the season, which pushed Vegas into Dallas's side of the bracket instead of Edmonton's. And so Edmonton, who are looking at a path of, you know, having to play the Vegas Golden Knights, who are the defending champions and have this rort of putting guys on long-term injury reserve and then bringing them back in the playoffs every single year. I think Mark Stone, who apparently wasn't right to play the final week of the season and then was like third on the team in time on ice in game one against Dallas, just one of the great, like a Marcus Smart 500-1 type of rort from Vegas. But with the Oilers avoiding the Knights and instead getting a relative layup series against the Kings. They were -200 to your point. And they take game one, so they're in very good position to get out of round one. Then round two, they're likely going to face the Canucks without their Vezina finalist goalie. And then round three, if you were to rank the teams that Edmonton wouldn't want to play, you would say 1 and 2 would be Dallas and Colorado. And as we speak now, Colorado's about to play, but they're both down 1-0 in their series. So I would say that Edmonton's most likely opponent in round three is probably now Vegas. And Edmonton will have home ice in that series, and that was going to be their round one matchup. They now push that to round three. Edmonton are going to, they'll be able to go through the West, in my opinion, with only having to play one of the four other best teams in the West. So it is really broken for them. I think plus 320 for them to win the West is a good bet. I think that's probably slightly better than the plus 650 to win the Cup, just because, what's that, like minus 130 average price in the Cup. I don't think they'll quite be that, because they won't have home ice against any of, really, basically any team that comes out of the East realistically. So I think that the West price is a little bit better, but I think everything is breaking for your Oilers.
Okay. Who out of, you know, just from a matchup standpoint, do you have somebody I should be cheering for or against in the East?
Well, I mean, I think the two best teams in the East, perhaps by margin, are Carolina and Florida. And you put the Rangers, I think they're a slight tier below Florida, not a great deal, but I would order it one Canes, two Panthers, three Rangers, and then Bruins, Leafs as your four and five. Edmonton, you could argue Edmonton have the highest talent level of any team, but they're not going to have home ice, which doesn't matter a ton in hockey, but still is, you know, a little bit of win probability. The Canes and Panthers are the two teams that I would be scared of, though. I'd rather play anyone else. I am on the Canes and Panthers, so I'm sorry. I want them to make it there. I would absolutely adore a Panthers or Canes v. Oilers Stanley Cup. And I think that is, you know, if I was to choose one team to come out of the West right now, it would be the Oilers. And if I was to choose one team out of the East, it would be Carolina, narrowly over Florida. But it is set up pretty well. And I think the bet at current prices is Edmonton.
I love it. I love it. Well, just one funny note. I got to think Edmonton, Florida would be the longest travel distance between playoff cities in Stanley Cup finals history, but I'll do a little bit of digging on that. I mean, that is a trip. that's a long distance.
I was lucky enough. I went to game three of the Stanley Cup finals last year, the Florida home game for them against Vegas. I was heavily on the Panthers. Fortunately, that was the one game in the series that they did win. I had a lot of my stake on the East, which was enough to make me a Panthers fan for life. But that stadium is immense. And it's a mixed kind of cadre of people in the stadium, but they create a very good atmosphere in Florida. And that Florida team is, this is very much speculative and subjective, and I usually prefer to, you know, rely on things more concrete. There's just a certain swagger and toughness about this Panthers team that I think might eclipse everyone else in the East. I think Carolina are probably a slightly better team, but just with the way that this Panthers team, their style of play, I think lends itself extremely well to the playoffs, with they're not dependent on the kind of beautiful game stuff that they were when they were winning President's Trophies a couple of years ago. Is a very tough team that is in the image of Matthew Tkachuk, who is actually, Drew, he's actually gone past Stephen Curry as my favorite athlete to watch in North American sports.
Matthew Tkachuk,
he's actually number one. I can't really explain it. He kept on scoring these walk-off winners for me in their run last year. And it's just like, there is something that is very difficult to pinpoint about why he is so good. He's not the fastest. He's not the strongest. He's not the most skilled. He is just, he is always on time. And just his vision, his toughness, the fact that he likes to scrap and fight, and he's the villain every single time. And he's also just kind of genius level with his passing and vision and his ability to rise in big moments, and I'm very happy to be cheering for Tkachuk and not against him. So yeah, big Matthew Tkachuk guy. Also a big IndyCar guy, Drew. And next stop on the IndyCar series is Barber Motorsports Park in Alabama. The green flag waves at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, from Matthew Tkachuk to JJ McCarthy. I was out here with a little NFL draft chat. JJ has kind of shaped this draft in a way in terms of how he has fluctuated from being a guy who was, you know, fringe of the top 10, probably just outside the top 10. And then, oh, is he actually going to go second? Now he might go fourth or fifth. And those are where the market is expecting him to go. Those are his two shortest outcomes, plus 180 to go fourth, plus 240 to go fifth. Do you have any sense on where JJ is going to go?
I don't, and it's killing me because if you could unlock this one piece of the draft, you would have like 10 really good bets. Like, this is kind of the quintessential piece of information here. As we stand currently, there's no liquid market for two anymore. It was up for a little bit this morning, and there was more Jaden Daniels activity that came through here. So I don't know if that's telling us that that's a done deal, that the Commanders have made a decision or not, but certainly it is looking more likely that he will be second. The third pick, and this was long assumed to just be Patriots are just going to take a quarterback. Don't overthink it. And now today there's wild rumors and speculations that the Giants are in the market to move up into the three, that the Vikings would obviously have interest in the three, and that both of those teams might actually secretly be targeting Drake May, not JJ McCarthy, when all along everybody who was assuming that a trade up was happening was penciling in JJ McCarthy. So I don't really know what to believe. This is, there's no track record of the Patriots organization as currently, constituted as being truthful. There's a long track record of the Giants as being untruthful, and there's kind of a question mark on exactly what the kind of front office for the Vikings is telling anyone, and whether they're even in the market to trade up, or whether they're just trying to accumulate the assets that they needed to keep the guys behind them. So I hate betting on draft props when you're counting on trade. I hate betting on draft props when the threat of a trade is very real, and both of those things exist in picks 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, and 8. Honestly, like, everything from pick 3 to 10 could get, could trade hands. I don't think they all will. I don't think many of them will. But just in general, the threat of that is, sowing chaos into this market. And for what it's worth, 90% of draft betting is information, and the last 10% is puzzle solving. And if you don't have the information, then you can't solve the puzzle. And this year there has been very, very little information available from true blue team sources who are telling you the truth. And for those reasons, this is going to be a pretty light draft for me betting wise. Do you have any strong disagreements with that?
No, I don't. It's kind of depressing in a way, talking about the draft, just because the limits landscape has changed so violently over the past 2-3 years. Like, this used to be the Wild West in terms of limits. I don't understand why books were taking the limits that they were, but I think Paolo Banchero torpedoed everything. And I know that we and a lot of others kind of got our fill on that, but I feel like you really topped everything else. And look, it's still fun to talk about because of the puzzle solving aspect. And it's just fun. Like, you have all this information, you have to piece it together, and books have to price very difficult markets to price. But it has been a cop out of sorts of like, well, we'll just pay less attention to pricing it if we're going to take max limits to win $500 or whatever, as opposed to substantially more than that in years past. But yeah, on JJ, I don't know. It never made sense that he would go two, and that's kind of fizzled out as you would expect. And I suspect that a lot of this is agent driven. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ultimately falls out of the top five. And right now he's plus 120 over 5.5 under minus 150. I mean, there's lots of people around the league who don't think that he's like significantly better or even better than like Michael Penix. Like, I don't really understand. Someone may love him because of the upside and the tools that they would trade up to four or five. But I mean, when you're making a bet on someone going in a position, counting on a trade from a team that you don't know anything about, like, that's always fraught with peril. And so I would suspect the most likely thing is that he just drops a little bit, and then that kind of second tier of teams that need a quarterback, like Minnesota and Denver and Vegas, that one of them would probably just grab him slightly outside the top 10, or maybe they trade up to eight with Atlanta or something. But yeah, I don't think that he is anywhere close to the lock to go top five that it was being painted as a couple of weeks ago, at least.
Oh, well, could not agree more strongly on that. And just kind of one final thought, like, the big moving piece, I think, right now is who makes the choice at three. And that pick is almost certainly going, well, assuming that the Daniels is not smoke and is real, then pick three is probably going to be Drake May. And we just don't know which team. And if it's the Vikings, then J.J. McCarthy, he's clearly sliding well out, in my opinion. I don't think the Giants are just going to take him at six, because I don't think anyone has a true talent rating of him being this high in the draft, as you know, to your point. So, I think we're kind of sitting here currently looking at a landscape where the top three are going to be QBs. It's going to be in order as expected, and just who ultimately makes the deal to either the Patriots hold on or make a deal for that third pick will kind of determine, whether JJ gets backstopped at 11 or somebody does a small trade up for him, or whether he slides a little bit further. But either way, his prop at 5.5 to the over looks like a good bet to me, because I don't see there being now priority for teams to move up into that range to take them.
Yep. All right. Take that, JJ. All right. We are done. Don't forget to check out NBCSports.com for more information to help you with your wagers. Thanks to those watching on the NBC Sports YouTube channel. If you're listening to us in podcast form, please rate and subscribe. Also, a reminder to find all of your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBCSports. From Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick, we'll see you soon.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.